Hi there, I'm Juliet Nichols, founder and director of Pineapple Audio Production, and you're listening to the Podcasting Playbook. We're really lucky to be supported by some incredible businesses at Pineapple, so I just want to take a minute here to thank Ice Cool Design, a super stylish, eco-friendly wine cooler. We've got some beautiful Pineapple branded ones, and you can find pics of them on our Insta. And Audioboom, one of the leading podcast publishers who help you get your podcast to Apple, Spotify, and the rest. We use them for tons of our content distribution, so we are big, big fans. On today's episode, we are very excited to have Rume Ugen with us. Rume is programming lead working at Vogue UK. In the past, she's worked for ITV and Global across their digital offerings and hosted her own dating podcast, Cheap Chat, with Nush Cope and Carlotta Constant. So hi, Rume. Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself? And then we will get on to today's topics.
My name's Rume Ugen. I am a digital content expert, I'll describe myself as. I've been working in digital content now for about 10 years, going from different media companies. I previously worked with you, Jules, obviously at Global, which is where I spent most of my career, heading up Heart. And now I've just started a new job as programming lead at Vogue Europe.
Oh my gosh, it's so exciting, isn't it? You've done like the pinnacle of the things that people would want to do in their media careers and the kinds of names that you're chucking out there. I mean, you know, name like ITV, Heart, Vogue, and it's those, I mean, most people would be happy with one of those.
I know. And it is one of those things. It's like, as you have been in the career for a long time, you become very like desensitized to some of these big names. And it's so important to kind of like take a step back and actually, you know, give yourself a little bit of a pat on the back. Just be like, oh, actually, you know what? Like, if 21-year-old Rume, who, you know, just left university, could look at where she is now, she'd be really happy. So it's just, you know, about taking a step back and just having a little pinch me moment and being like, you know what, you're doing all right. It's so easy to compare yourself to others, you know?
There'll always be someone, won't there, who's that bit further ahead of you. And obviously people who are way, 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 way behind you in their journey. So yeah, it's easy to do that, but it's wicked to have a moment just to think about it. Because seriously, you know, you look from the outside in and obviously it's different when you're in the middle of it, but you are doing amazing, amazing things. So go into a little bit more depth for us. Say when you were 21, where were you and what was the game plan for your career?
So when I was 21, I was just finishing up my degree at Leeds University. So I'm one of those people, I've always known kind of what I wanted to do from a very, very young age. Like, I always knew that I wanted to work in media, and I've probably known that since I was about 13, 14, which, looking back now, it's actually a privilege, because I've realized, like, talking to other people, not everybody knows what they want to do. And it means that their journey has been a little bit, I mean, my journey was difficult as well. But I think for some other people, like, they just spent a lot of time trying to figure out what they want to do, which is actually, you know, it must be really hard. So I'm quite happy that I kind of knew what I wanted to do from a very young age. So yeah, I went to Leeds Uni and I did broadcast journalism with the hope that I would one day maybe be Oprah. And like, I could, because I found out what course Oprah Winfrey did. And I remember my mum being like, oh, you know, you want to do presenting, you know, Oprah Winfrey did broadcast journalism. Like, you should try and study that at university. And I was like, what's that? So I Googled it, loved the sound of it. So yeah, my course was all about kind of television broadcasting, radio broadcasting, with a little bit of digital media at the time, because, like, you know, online websites had only kind of just really taken off in terms of blogs. Twitter wasn't even really a thing, really, when I was studying. Instagram certainly wasn't a thing. So I didn't even think a job like mine would exist at that time. So I was very much just like, okay, I really want to get into television, maybe radio. And so I'll just pursue broadcast journalism at uni. So yeah, fast forward to 21, I was ready to kind of graduate. And I remember I didn't get quite the grade that I wanted, so that already kind of like knocked my confidence. And, like, you know, I was like, oh, am I really gonna, you know, make it? I think I got a 2-2 instead of a 2-1 that I wanted. And I remember just that feeling of going to graduation, and so many people already had all their internships lined up, or if they didn't have internships, they actually had paid jobs lined up, which I just couldn't believe, because, you know, the media industry is so hard to
it doesn't crack. Happen like that in media, does it? You don't have it just like click click lined up.
No, you don't. And like the amount of people that when I went back to graduation already had kind of little jobs lined up and stuff like that, and I had nothing. I didn't know anyone. I had like no contacts. I remember just feeling a bit like a bit discouraged a little bit. But I did have, what did I have lined up? I think I had like a summer internship lined up at the university, at the BBC, and then one with like a local radio station or whatever. So yeah, the intention was to kind of go into television, left uni. That did not happen at all. But I remember just being so disheartened. Like I was going for like runner jobs and also seeing the pay of some of those runner jobs. Like
brutal.
It should actually be illegal. I think there needs to be a separate conversation around entry-level pay because it's literally slave labor. But yeah, so I kind of did my 2 internships and then I was unemployed. I felt like I was like unemployed for the longest out of all my friends, relentless interning for free whilst managing, you know, side jobs to try and pay for the internships so that, you know, we could travel into London and kind of, yeah, do them because you're not being paid and they're full time. And yeah, I think I kind of got my break at a website called Entertainment Wise, which was doing celebrity news, which was right up my street because I've always been into kind of like pop culture and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, my first freelance gig was writing for an entertainment news website and I got paid, I think it was like £8 an hour or something. And I was just so happy just to have that. And it was only at the weekends, evenings and weekends, but that was kind of where I took the turn into digital and learning how to kind of manage websites and drive website clicks, and then from there thinking about how we can use social to drive to websites, and it kind of was a snowball effect from there.
And now somehow you've ended up at Heart, ITV and now Vogue.
I know.
It's amazing.
It's so funny when you say it like that, but yeah, I mean, Heart was an amazing time. I still consider Heart as like my first proper job. Like I had freelance jobs, I had an entertainment reporting job for a company before I went to Heart, but Heart I felt like was my proper, like, you know, like annual salary job. I'm working in a glossy company, and I think me and you, we both started not long after each other, and I remember we were so excited to be working.
We were bouncing. It was, I had a similar feeling to you because that was my first full-time proper paid job, and it was like magical. It was like every day was like walking on a cloud going into work. It was like, do I really get to do this every day? It was fantastic.
Yeah, and I remember just being like so happy, and you walk into your offices and everyone's so lovely. So yeah, I was at Heart for, well, I think it was like 4 years by the time I left. And that's kind of where I really found my feet in terms of like, yeah, managing a team, digital content, a content schedule, in addition to kind of, yeah, producing bespoke content as well and stuff that can run on the website. So, yeah, I think that was really kind of like the start and the shaping of me. I learned a lot during that time there. And yeah, since then I've kind of moved on to ITV. So it was almost like things came around full circle, you know, because I obviously studied broadcast journalism, radio and television, couldn't get in for all those early years. And I was like, oh, let me try this, you know, this website thing, this digital thing, and see how that goes. And then that actually ended up being the thing
got
that
you wanted to go.
Made me come full circle. And yeah, working in radio and television. So it was great.
And now you're the newbie at Vogue.
Now I'm the newbie at Vogue, yeah. So I just started, I haven't been there too long, but I'm now programming lead for Vogue Europe. So I head up the like programming strategy. When we say programming, it basically just means like deciding what content we should be making for what audiences and why, where it should be going and when. So I work very, very closely with the production and the development teams who create all of the kind of iconic Vogue YouTube series that you'll see. So like In the Bag, you know, like 72 Questions, all those kind of stuff. They make those titles. And I work with the local European markets to bring some of those titles over into the Europe YouTube channels to help grow their channels. And we also develop new pilots for those channels as well that are all in local language. So I deal with teams in different countries every day, and I'm learning all the little quirks of like different cultures and stuff as well, which I'm finding really kind of eye-opening and interesting too.
I mean, we all know you've got the most glamorous like London life. I had a taste of it with you. I think when we were at Heart together, we used to kind of go along to the odd odd event or, you know, event. Screening or whatever. But is it really as glam as it looks from the outside?
I don't think any job's as glamorous as they look from the outside. I mean, we've all worked in media now for a long time. And it's like, there are like obviously some great perks. I mean, I've just started, so I have not anywhere near rinsed it as much as I should. I've just been so busy. I haven't even had time to even send out an email to like a contact or anything. I've just been so busy. But I mean, the area that I work, I'm quite happy. It's very kind of like laid back, very relaxed. Obviously you've got the iconic Vogue house, which is, you know, where all the British Vogue is made, and it's all very kind of, you know, there's a reputation that kind of comes with that. But you know, where I'm based, I'm part of a division of the business called Condé Nast Entertainment, which is quite relatively new. And that's kind of the video side of the business. And it's a lot more laid back. Like, and I was quite happy because I was thinking, am I going to be walking into kind of the Devil Wears Prada? And, you know, it's just not like that at all. It's actually just like, you know, super laid back. I feel like I can wear what I want. Obviously, I will always show up and show out at work because it's just like who I am.
I remember just being so excited to see you come in the morning and what you were going to be wearing. You're so, you style
That's
it.
Hilarious. I love dressing up. Like I think people think I take like hours and hours to get ready, or like I'm one of those people that are like planning my outfit the night before. It doesn't take that much thought, but I do obviously like, I think the way you present yourself, especially in the workplace, like I think it can speak volumes, you know, and it just kind of sets the precedent.
I agree, especially when you've got big time people wandering around the office as well, Rumi.
Exactly. Definitely a lot more laid back than it would seem in the film. Although I did actually see Anna Wintour already.
That's
kind of like my first 2 weeks in the office, and I had a bit of a moment kind of thing, you know.
That's the ultimate really, isn't it? What was she doing? What was she like?
Yeah, I always describe her. I just feel like she's just like, she's such an icon to the point she's like, everything about her is exactly how you would expect it to be. And I'm sure the people who know her best will probably see a very different side to her. But like, just from the small glimpse that I got, I was kind of like sat in my office and there's these big glass windows. And all of a sudden I just see this face, like, you know, look in the window, I guess, to see if the meeting was free. And it was Anna Wintour. And I was like, like literally, you know, you're like trying not to like make a shocked expression because the window is glass and she can see me. And I'm there like gawping, like, oh my God, this is like Anna Wintour. But like, yeah, her hair in the iconic bob, iconic A-line dress is that, you know, she always wears. She seems really cool. And it was just for a big like company conference call. And, you know, she just seems very like funny, witty, personable. She was wearing sunglasses, obviously. But yeah, she seems amazing. So yeah, hopefully I'll get to bump into her a little bit more often. But you could definitely feel the like the boss energy in the building that day, which is nice. It's infectious.
I mean, this is your job, Rumi, but I mean, you'd also mentioned that there are obviously, you know, it's not all shiny. There are challenges along the way. If you could pick out a challenge, one challenge, there are obviously multiples, but if you had to pick out one that you've kind of overcome and you faced in your career, what do you think that would be?
In my career, oh gosh, there's so many. I think the first is just like tenacity, just like keep on going. Like my mum always says that she kind of admires me because she's like, oh, no matter all, like, you know, no matter what happens, like even when you get like setbacks and stuff, you just keep going. And it's not like, which is funny to me because I think am I a positive person? I definitely think I'm a realist. I wouldn't necessarily say, like you, Jules, I'd say you're probably one of the most positive people. Like you like radiate like positivity. I don't think I'm like that. I think I'm definitely like a realist, but I'm one of those people, I'm just like, well, you keep going because you have to. Like if you don't keep going, like what's the alternative exactly?
Yeah, I'm sure you're the same. I've noticed that in media, and I'm sure you and I have spoken about it before, that the people who aren't tenacious, they don't last. Something that you have to have in media, like rightly or wrongly, it's the tenacious ones, the ones that keep bouncing back, that take the knocks and keep going, that last.
100%. You have to. And I think for me, it's always been driven by the fact that I've just always known from a very, very young age. I was just like, I don't think, like, you know what it was? I think I've got PTSD from temping jobs when I left university, and I had to do all these really boring admin tasks, sat at a desk, just really annoyed that I haven't got my job in media yet. And I think that's given me the PTSD, like, that I need to fuel me on in keeping going. It's like, well, if you don't keep going, if you quit, or, you know, what are you going to do? Are you going to go and get your 9-to-5 admin job? Probably not.
No, I can really empathize with that. I think I had exactly the same thing. I was really lucky in a way that I had similar jobs when I was sort of 16. My family were, you know, they pushed me to get those kinds of jobs initially when I was studying. And I had exactly the same feeling. I was like, this is not going to be my life, and I will fight to make sure that it's not my life.
Yeah. It wasn't for me at all. And there was a point, especially when you just want to start earning money and you're getting like setbacks and stuff, that you're just like, is this more effort than it's kind of worth? And I remember I definitely had like 2 points where I was considering just trying to pursue something else. So one was when I had a temp job at like a recruitment agency, and it was just a very like, I got on really well with everyone there. So you immediately become comfortable. I had regular money coming in as well as a temp. And my contract was coming towards an end, and there was only one permanent placement going, and I think there were like 4 temps at the time. And I remember being really annoyed that like I didn't get it, because I thought I was going to get it. And I remember asking like my boss at the time, I was like, why wasn't I considered for kind of like the full-time role? And he was like, oh, well, you know, since you've come here, you've always like made it very clear that you're interested in pursuing a career in media. And that, you know, you really wanted to try and do like a big internship next year. And so I just thought that, you know, actually it's probably best that you pursue that.
That's the kick that you need sometimes.
I know. And I remember being really annoyed that I didn't get that recruitment job. But actually he did me such a massive favor.
Best thing that ever happened to
because,
you.
Because, yeah, it was that next year that I ended up getting like an internship, I think, at Mail on Sunday.
What do they say about a redirection?
The phrase I've heard is behind every rejection is a protection.
Or rejection is a redirection. Same thing.
Yeah, rejection is a redirection. Yeah, I love it. Basically that. So, so I think obstacles that I've overcome, tenacity, just kind of keeping on going, not feeling discouraged that you might not have contacts, you might not know anyone. Just use the resources that are available to you. Like there's so much resources that are available to you that are public knowledge. I remember picking up like Celebs on Sunday magazine, and that's how I actually got the internship. I just went into the back of the magazine, and they normally in every magazine like list all the contributors. And luckily they had their email addresses as well at the time. I don't know if they do that anymore. And the phone number for the switchboard. And I literally was like, right, who's the features like editor then?
I love
I literally
that.
Just picked up and I literally started at A and just went down and just like asked to try and talk to someone on the phone. I managed to get through to the features director, and I literally just asked her for an internship on the phone. And she was like, oh yeah, we are actually looking for a new intern. Like, can you come in? And so that's how I got it. And I used to message people on Twitter. I used to like message people on Facebook. How intrusive is that? But I just used to like,
do what you've got
to
do.
I used to find people's names and then just try and find them on social media and just like message them.
I love that you did that. Oh my gosh. See, there you go. Tenacity. So you and I met then. We met and bonded at heart, obviously, and had some really good times. And then we ended up working together a little bit on Cheap Chat, which is your baby, your podcast baby, isn't it? So tell us a little bit about that. Like what made you start Cheap Chat, and what's it all about?
So Cheap Chat was the brainchild of many conversations that I've had with girlfriends over the year. just feeling very kind of disillusioned by dating. And I'm sure anyone who's dated in London, and not even in London, but just UK, and you're sub 30 years old, probably understands like how difficult it can be, especially regarding this new phenomenon that's called the talking stage or the situationship stage. Every other stage, there's like a million stages now that it takes before you get to the actual relationship bit. So yeah, it just came from numerous conversations with like my girlfriends. You know, you have like kind of girl chats, and someone will drop screenshots into the group chat saying, "Oh my god, he just said this," or, you know, like, "What do I say? What do I reply back?" And I was like, "I bet there's so. I bet every girl like friendship group, WhatsApp group, does the same thing. Like, tries to help their friends come up with the most perfect sassy reply to send to a guy." And so I was like, "I'm sure there's a podcast in this, you know." And obviously, I was inspired by kind of The Receipts, which was like obviously a massive podcast at the time, and you know they're doing a phenomenal job, and they had this whole concept of kind of like helping girls with not necessarily just dating advice, but just life advice in general. And they were kind of like agony aunts. And I just thought it was really refreshing to see kind of like a young group of relatable girls doing the whole agony aunt thing, because it's something that you kind of associate with like a Dear Deirdre column in like The Sun, or like, you know. And so it was just nice to see these like cool, relatable girls that could actually be your friends, giving real advice that you'd actually use for situations that are really relatable. So yeah, I kind of just fused the two, really. I was like, well, there's obviously girls out there that need advice. And like, I do feel like texting is such a big part of like the courting process now, as like a millennial or whatever. I was like, we need to start like uncovering, like, yeah, what's going on in kind of like the DMs. Again, there's a whole phenomenon of people sliding in, and that's become the way that people date now. And so just taking all those kind of themes and putting it together to make, yeah, podcasts. And then the name also came from a friend of mine had been seeing a guy who just like wasn't serious and was just like messing her about, stringing her along for a very long time. And I can't remember what he said to her, and she relayed it in our group chat. My co-host Carlotta at the time said something like, "Yeah, yeah, whatever, it's cheap chat, put a ring on it," or something like that. And it just kind of like stuck. And then I was like, oh my god. So when we did this podcast, I was like, yeah, that's cheap chat, he's feeding you cheap chat. So yeah, that's kind of where it came from.
I remember just loving the concept so much, and I think I dived in the studio and helped you record it and edit it for a while. And it was just such an amazing energy. It was like one of the first podcasts, I think, that I've really got excited about to be involved in, to be part of the team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. There was definitely something about that. I mean, the cast changed from kind of pilot stage to when we first kind of aired. I actually had an original lineup. And there was four of us, actually. And it was myself, my best friend Carlotta, who I've just always known as kind of a bit of a man-eater. So I was like, she has to be on it. There was a girl called Els the Witch, who is now an incredible presenter and an influencer, doing incredible things. I think she's got a show on Kiss FM now. So now I'm like, oh my god, I've got an eye for talent. Like, I really know, like, what good talent is. Another girl called Clarice Juliet, who was also actually on Love Island. And I even remember on that first pilot recording, just like I had like my little notes that I'd written, and I'd like produced the whole thing. And even that, I remember just thinking, oh my god, there's really something here. Like, this has got legs. Like, and it just had like this sassy energy.
It's your energy though, Rima, you know that.
And like completely unfiltered. And it was just like, it just felt very current, very relevant, and very like reflective of dating now. I was like, there's something here. And then the cast changed. We had a lineup change. And I remember like coming across Nush and just thinking like, oh my god, first of all, this girl's absolutely gorgeous. And secondly, I remember just thinking she had like the best energy. And she was very like London, she's from South London, she's a South London girl. And again, she just had that kind of like sass and energy that I wanted to bring to the show. And I remember, like, you know, I'd spoken to Nush, she said she wanted to do it, but I hadn't managed to get her in a room with Carlotta yet. Like, we hadn't even met. the first day that I didn't get to do a demo with her, because I remember the deadline was kind of coming up for trying to get this out. The first time that we recorded together was literally when we were all in the studio together for the first time. That was the first time she was meeting Carlotta. It's the first time that we were all going to record together, and we just nailed that first episode. Like, I sometimes try and think, like, what was it that set our podcast apart from, like, others? And I genuinely think it was, like, the genuine connection that we had as friends on the podcast, and that chemistry that, and every time I showed it to people, it would always come back to kind of like the chemistry of us three, and like how we just really seemed like real friends. I mean, we are friends, but like, and we became friends, but in those first two episodes, we didn't know each other at all.
The chemistry, I always say the chemistry and everybody having a good time, that's the essence of what you've got to try and achieve as like a producer, or you know, whoever's kind of organizing and setting the tone. If everyone's having a good time, then as a listener you hear that, and that's what you want to commit to, that chemistry, that good energy, the vibes, whatever you want to call it. That's what we're always trying to achieve, is everyone having a good time. So I totally agree with that.
And that's also something that I wanted to bring in sonically to the podcast too as well, because like, I don't know about you, but like I used to love all those like studio formats back in the 90s, those like, you know, the Big Breakfast. And then I used to watch, when I got a bit older, I used to watch MTV Select with Richard Blackwood and June Sarpong. And even like T4 as well, like those studio shows, like one, the presenters had just like amazing personalities and good chemistries with each other. But there was always seemed like there was like this like party atmosphere on set. Like, I just liked the fact that you could hear crew, like you could hear, do you know what I mean? And like, and then on like Cheap Chat, I just wanted a very similar thing of like, you feeling like you're part of the conversation. Like, I know that some podcasts, like they're produced to a T where it's very like, no one talks over each other and it's all very kind of like sanitized. And I just didn't want that. I wanted it to feel like a very authentic conversation. And like, if that means that we got a bit excited and we're talking over each other, or we're a bit loud or excited, we cackle, I just wanted it to feel very authentic.
For sure. What do you think you were looking for from a producer in that sense? Do you think it was that kind of encouragement of things being free?
Yeah, I think from a producer, and this is why I feel like we got on so well, it's just like somebody who had like a shared vision and like understood like what we were trying to achieve, like sonically. And yeah, I think just letting us be unfiltered and just kind of like not try, like we're three loud, opinionated women, and I just want somebody who would just let us be us and just not, I just didn't want it to sound sanitized. Like, I just wanted, and even like in the edit, like the episodes are very short. They're only like 20 minutes long. Some podcasts like go on for ages and I just want it to be short. I've got a very, very, very short attention span. Like, it takes a lot to kind of like keep my attention. So for me, whenever I'm listening to like the podcast in the edit and stuff, pace is so important. Like, I just want the pace to keep going and I want the energy to kind of maintain throughout. Like, I don't want there to be dips or lulls.
That slickness is so important, I think. And actually, all the research shows that like 20, 25, 22 minutes is the optimum amount of time for people to really pay attention. So, and if you take into account now people's journey times or that free time they've got, 20 minutes is perfect. Just to close things off, I could speak to you all day about this stuff, by the way, but I don't want to take up too much of your time. So just to close things off, we talked about tenacity, we've talked about the challenges, the ups and downs, the glam and the not so glam side of things in media. If you could pass on one kind of lesson or one takeaway for people listening, one thing that you've learned over your career and your time podcasting and in business, what would that be?
Yeah, just like dream big. Think big and just like, yeah, don't be discouraged. Like, just keep going. Not everyone's going to kind of understand the vision along the way. And there'll be people who try and rein in your way of thinking and tell you to think a little bit more realistically or a bit more practically. And I'm sure it comes from a place of like love and like wanting to like protect you. But at the same time, I just think, you know, just like stick with your gut. Like, if you've got a vision and you want to go for it, like make it happen and just really use the resources available to you.
That is really what you've done, Rume. So you're the living example of that working out 100%. So Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it. And I'm excited for people to be able to listen to your story.
Oh, thank you. It's been lovely talking with you, Jules.
Thank you so much, Rume, for being our guest on the Podcasting Playbook. And thank you all for tuning in and getting to know a little more about the work we do. Don't forget to follow and review for more podcast episodes coming your way soon. And before I go, I just want to take a minute here to let you know about something I'm really excited we're doing, the Pineapple Awards. We're all about investing in young people and supporting them as they get into the audio, podcasting and radio industries. So we've set up an annual opportunity to showcase the talent of young people. They'll get great prizes, real industry experience, and the chance to network with the biggest bosses of the industry. And there are three categories: Best Producer, Best Editor, and Best Creative Idea. The Pineapple Awards are supported by Leo Bites, Stella, House of Kalmar, Ice Cool Design, and Audio Boom. The closing date is February 28th, 2023, and all the details are on the Pineapple website, so get entering now.